Take a network break. Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and a large bag of glazed virtual donuts. Take your desk phone off the hook and set your smartphone to airplane mode and settle in. Now remember, it is perfectly acceptable to throw your virtual donuts at us during the show. We like to get people at home playing along. Right? Great. With Drew out of the office this week, I'm in the driving seat. I'm Greg Farrow, and with me is my faithful co-host, Mr. Ethan Banks, and our special guest today is John Free. John, thanks for coming on the show and talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Before we get started, I just want to say thanks to Extra Shop. Today's show is sponsored by Extra Hop, the leader in real-time IT analytics and the pioneer of wire data, the ultimate lens into digital transactions. The ExtraHop platform provides insight across the IT environment, helping IT leaders make data-driven decisions to optimize performance, security, and the customer experience. Tweet at ExtraHop, just the way it sounds, and mention the packet pushes to get a free t-shirt. All you got to do is tweet at ExtraHop and get a free t-shirt. And to learn more about ExtraHop and even to try it for yourself, visit extrahop.com/demo, where you can find out more. We'll talk more about them during the show. And just one final thing before we get into the action today, which is a bit of a light show because it's been a quiet week. It's August, summer holidays, and all the vendors are taking a rest. Bless, right? We've got a survey going for packet pushers. What we do is once a year, we do a survey of you, the audience, and what we need is for you to just tell us a little bit about yourself. We don't collect any personally identifiable information. We don't take any personal data because that would suck. Who wants that anyway? What would we do with it? But if you just tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are, where you are, that helps us give some information to our sponsors. So if you haven't already completed the sponsorship survey, head over to the website. There's a link on the homepage to go and hit that up. That would be really great. All right, on with the show. So this week, ONAP, the open source project, continues to gain momentum. We saw an announcement from the ONAP Foundation that Comcast has signed up to join this. This means that the arrival of first and second tier telcos, as well as suppliers, signal the continuing momentum around ONAP. Now, I just wonder, John, did you track this week?
Yeah, I was actually looking at that. And there's been a lot of things going on with ONAP. AT&T has put a lot of money into a venture fund. So we're starting to see some momentum around ONAP. And we're starting to see in that orchestration layer some kind of groups forming. You've got what's going on in the European area. And now ONAP seems to be taking pretty much all of the US and Asia.
So my thesis has always been is that ONAP is a version of Open Daylight kind of targeted that the telcos are kind of building for themselves as a orchestration tool for themselves. And we're seeing them sort of flock in large numbers and drawing in the vendors behind them, might I say. All of the vendors are joining up. And my thesis at the moment is that we're going to see ONAP sort of prove out the Open Daylight platform. And then maybe in the future we could see it turn around and Open Daylight for enterprise could become a thing.
I think so. I think everything's going to get led by the telcos. You're going to see them take the bullets first because they have the most to gain by doing a lot of these changes. And eventually all that trickles down into enterprise.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have the same thesis about OpenStack because we're seeing OpenStack be used by the telcos to do their edge data centers. You know, their POPs will become OpenStack. And I suspect that this sort of hardening and deployment of OpenStack eventually will see, you know, a lean down focused version of the product instead of the bucket of mystery that it was before, you know, every vendor going in a different direction and trying to add its something to the mix. And the carriers are going to say, no, we're the customer. We just want this piece. And that focus will eventually drive it forward. Like very much like I saw Linux go through in the late 90s, where they just focused on doing something. Like, you know, we went through the distros and then the distros died. And then there was just one Linux in the end.
Right. And I think you'll probably see IoT is one of the most interesting use cases for getting this technology out into the enterprise, because IoT is going to be there out on the edge, and it's going to be something that's a little different from everything else happening in the data center. It's going to be the easiest point for an enterprise to be able to consume some of these technologies and start small.
Mm. Yeah. Ethan, do you think Open Daylight's going to come back, or are you sort of on the side of it's never going to go anywhere, it's dead sort of thing?
Mixed feelings. You know, John, I was thinking about your comment there. A lot of this stuff trickles down to the enterprise. And with some of these things, I'm not sure what's going to trickle down to the enterprise. They seem to be going more for canned solutions that come from the vendor with a tidy bow wrapped around it. And, you know, folks are glomming onto those solutions rather than taking the open source platforms that give them a lot of this capability, but it requires so much upfront work to make it go. that it they just don't seem to be grabbing it unless it, again, unless it comes from the vendor ready to rock and roll already. So I'm skeptical that we're going to see that much consolidation, really. I think the service providers are making tools that are good for them, and the enterprises are taking what the vendors hand them as long as it works and makes their lives better for the most part.
So that reminds me of the, you know, in the 1999 when everybody was buying Solaris operating systems and Sun Netrust servers to run their websites on. And then shortly afterwards, everybody realized that you could basically do all the same stuff on Linux. And why am I running Solaris? And that's kind of, you know, Linux was around, but everybody in the enterprise was racing to buy branded solutions that were safe. And then just a few years later, Linux swept through the data center and started to kill off Windows NT, you know, and so.
And that's a wait and see in the enterprise for me, because, you know, going back to a point you've made before is cost doesn't seem to be the biggest driver for a lot of this stuff. You know, ease of use and just, you know, it's got to work seems to be the bigger drivers these days. But maybe someday we get there where a lot like white box disaggregation and then a lot of these open source tools that can drive all of that begin to make their way into the enterprise. And someone does start asking that question.
Yeah, I think the point is that the telcos have got so much money to save by not buying these closed systems that they're willing to drive open source in a direction that it needs to go for them. You know, that's the momentum that Linux had to build over the years as an open source project. And eventually we'll have something that's stable, trustable, you know, and if it's deployed in telcos, there's no reason why it couldn't be repackaged for the enterprise at a, and be the future, I suspect.
We'll see.
And Greg, you hit the nail on the head with the word you said earlier, which was safe. And when the technologies roll into the enterprise, there's two things they need. They need safety and they need experience. And that's why in the early days of the web, everyone was running Sun, because Sun had the experience and the IT teams didn't. But as the IT teams get experience, they start to understand, hey, I can do things a little differently. And you know, Ethan, to your point about all the white box networking can come along. I don't think the white box vendors, guys like Acton and whatnot, are going to get traction in enterprises. But I think some of the other more branded like Dell HP type products might become a little more prevalent as the open source tools come along. But it's the safety and it's the experience. So
make I'm not too sure. I don't think the safety, I think it's perceived safety versus real safety. I mean, the enterprise has been buying dodgy products for 30 years. Look at Oracle, right? That product is not exactly safe or secure or reliable or predictable, but people have been happily coughing up many, many bucks and believing, you know, and creating a self-delusion that this is the solution to all of their woes. It's a perception of whether it's safe to be used or not. And in the meantime, the vendors are out there saying, but if you only pay us big money, you'll have something that's safe. It won't. I mean, clearly, I mean, how many of us have bought products from a vendor only to have them fail? And in fact, we spend big money on a product, it turns up on site. What's the first thing we do? We put it into a lab and test it to see if it actually works.
But safety is not safety of the product, it's safety of the decision.
Yeah.
So I can buy Oracle. It might not be the safest thing for my business, but I'm probably not going to lose my job over it.
No, exactly. Well, speaking of not losing your job, Cisco closed on the Viptela purchase this week. So SD-WAN continues to gain speed. We're seeing lots of crazy numbers being tossed around. We saw IDC lay down a report this week which predicts that the SD-WAN market will reach $8 billion by 2021 as enterprise branch networks requirement accelerates. That'd be an interesting one to get a read of on the inside. Now, it's been a few months since May when Cisco announced their decision to buy Viptela, so we've had 3 or 4 months under the bridge. I think there's a few things to be thought about from this decision, but John, you've got a few thoughts on what Cisco and Viptela is going to happen. Is it going to work out? Do you think they're going to make hay out of it?
I think they will. I think Cisco, you know, they've also got IWAN, so they've got a variety of different ways to approach WAN, and they're trying to play both sides. I think ultimately it's going to work out well for them, but I think you're going to see a lot of transformation in the SD-WAN business as carriers really jump in, and a lot of them are getting involved to try to get that kind of buy off that land before everybody else gets in the market. So I think right now for Cisco, the biggest thing is keep that Viptela momentum going and try to use that as a bridge to eventually get their company in that direction. But they got a lot of changing that they're going to have to do. They seem to be getting the software-defined religion, but they're getting it slowly.
I guess the theory there would be that they don't want to disrupt this quarter's sales. They want to be fairly careful not to disrupt the sales that they're making right now and get everybody to stop purchasing while they wait for SD-WAN to arrive. That wouldn't be something they'd want.
Yeah, it's delicate gymnastics at this point, but, you know, it's like trying to turn a super tanker around. You can do it. It just takes a lot of navigating skills.
I guess the flip side of it is that we're also seeing Cisco make massive changes to its licensing scheme. It's got the Cisco ONE or One Enterprise licensing scheme. They're trying to shift customers over to recurring licensing. They're trying to pretend they're a cloud company in some ways. And I think when I read up on the So I looked at the announcement that Cisco raised. There's a link in the show notes about this, but I did some tea leaf reading, and let's go over it a little bit. It says Cisco is committed to offering the broadest range of SD-WAN solutions to our customers. In other words, we don't know which SD-WAN solution we want to choose as the winner, so we're going to have all of them. And then it says selecting the right solution is based on understanding our customers' needs and goals. Mm-hmm. All right. So what they're saying here is that they're going to provide customers with the following options. For customers and partners that require a cloud-first SD-WAN solution with advanced routing, complex topologies, and granular segmentation, Cisco's SD-WAN solution will be based on Viptela. For customers looking for unified threat management solutions with SD-WAN or our existing Cisco Meraki customers, then Cisco Meraki is the recommended solution, although I wouldn't necessarily call Cisco's Meraki SD-WAN too much like SD-WAN. Anyway, and then for customers of Cisco's IWAN solution, we will continue to invest in the roadmap of IWAN and support customers with the IWAN solution as new unified offers are made available with Viptela's technology incorporated in the ISR and ASRs. Customers will be able to migrate to the new unified solution as needed. I think what Cisco's saying there is if you're using IWAN today, they're going to keep it up for a while, but eventually you'll be migrating to Viptela.
Right.
If you're looking for a more integrated solution with NFV functionality and low end, then start going to Meraki because they've got some SD-WAN features baked into the Meraki product. But otherwise, it's going to be cloud-first SD-WAN with Viptela. So Viptela has the controller platform in the cloud. You sign up in the cloud. It's got the continuous licensing of the management platform. And so Cisco is going to move down the Viptela path. That's what that suggests.
Yeah, and it basically says that the IWAN is... it's on its way out. Obviously, it'll have a long tail on it, so it's not going to go away tomorrow, but they want to get people over onto that Viptela platform. I think the real challenge is going to be a year, 2 years from now, when you've got a Meraki and a Viptela, how are you really going to be able to differentiate those two products?
Okay, so I'll chime in here and say that the Meraki solution is the branch-in-a-box solution. I think it's a different customer that consumes that product. That's the distinction. They're different in functionality and capability. Viptela will end up going towards the higher-end customer, and the Meraki product will go towards the lower-end customer who needs simple functionality rolled all up into one physical platform.
And are willing to accept the limitations of the Meraki. Like, Meraki gives you, this is what you get. Can I have this? No. Then if you want some customized features or some complexity or want to do some stupid stuff, then you would go and get the Viptela to integrate that capability. I think what they're saying here is that Cisco IWAN is definitely on the way out. So if you're listening to this, you can read the tea leaves. In the usual way of Cisco's theory of maximum confusion, justify maximum sales, overload, more sales, send salespeople out, kill the customer, grab the deal, take the money. What Cisco's trying to say here is that IWAN is going to, we're going to keep it alive for a while because after all, it's all just part of iOS anyway. But long-term, Viptela's technology is either going to be folded into iOS or you're going to have ISRs and ASRs that will run a Viptela-centric operating system that has the features that Viptela has. Now, most of Viptela's features are actually OEM-acquired pieces of software from third parties like Qosmos and Sixwind. So Cisco will probably look to replace those. So potentially that could be a bumpy ride as Cisco attempts to take the device features and use the iOS features, which, you know, if IWAN didn't work, maybe iOS is not the right way to go about this. But let's assume that Cisco's definitely focusing on quality and reliability these days. Then now you know where you are. Viptela will be the SD-WAN technology that Cisco's leading forward. IWAN will be phased out. And as I think you summed it up well, Ethan, branch in a box, you should look for Meraki. So if you want your Wi-Fi, threat management, some security functions, what some people would call network functions virtualization, that sounds like it. All right, let's take this moment to have a break and talk a little bit about our sponsor, ExtraHop. ExtraHop is the leader in real-time IT analytics and pioneering wire data, the window into digital transactions. They provide insight across the IT environment from the data center to the edge to the cloud, helping IT leaders make data-driven decisions that enable them to optimize performance, security, and customer experience. For too long, IT has thought of the network as either plumbing or the problem. With ExtraHop, the network becomes the biggest source of real-time visibility for IT. That's because ExtraHop does the analysis first and stores packets last, creating wired data which encompasses all interactions between IT systems and the organizations which rely on them. Wired data is rich, real-time, observed, and objective. Analyzing it at scale transforms the network from a transport function to the foundation of all digital experience. With ExtraHop, companies like T-Mobile, Google, Adobe, McKesson, Netflix, and Expedia save millions of dollars and thousands of hours, improving application response times by more than 70% and a mean time to resolution by up to 90%. To learn more about ExtraHop and try it for yourself, visit them at extrahop.com/demo. Connect with them on Twitter as @ExtraHop. And if you mention the packet pushes when you tweet at them, you will receive a free T-shirt. ExtraHop, it's instant insight for IT. Thanks to ExtraHop for sponsoring the Packet Pushers. All right, back to the show. Ethan, you've been getting a load of some new vendors. You've been getting some briefs by them. You saw that PRTG is doing something a bit different.
Yeah, I chatted with the folks at PRTG. They are launching a version of their product via SaaS, so software as a service, all the rage. And PRTG is a monitoring company, so they're the folks that you would use their platform and then via Ping, SNMP, and other query tools, keep track of your network and other parts of your IT infrastructure. So this is a software as a service beta program that they've launched at my-prtg.com. Everything's running up in Amazon AWS. They've got a cloud controller that does serverless functions, automatically creates and controls a virtual machine for each user that is taking advantage of the service. And the idea here is you don't have to build your own PRTG server that you run. You instead run that up in the cloud. And all you have to run on premises is an agent that sits on a Windows box. The agent collects all the data, pumps all the data back into the PRTG instance up in the cloud. And there you go. So life's supposed to be easier for you there.
Do you think that's going to really replace, if I have to send all of my data off to the cloud, is that actually going to give me a real-time insight? We just talked about ExtraHop a minute ago, and that actually is a real-time traffic monitoring because you've got all the data being processed locally. If I have to send data off to PRTG in the cloud, it's not that it's worse, it's just different. It's going to be slower to react.
Well, it's not really any different in the PRTG model. PRTG is a polling model. So whether the data is up in the cloud or whether the data is, sitting locally doesn't really matter. This isn't about that. This is about not having to run your own server, not having to do updates, not having to worry about the care and feeding of that box. Like most SaaS offerings, they're handling it for you. And again, it just makes your life as an admin a bit easier. And then, and of course, it lets you also shift the cost to an OPEX model rather than spend whatever you got to spend for your PRTG server to run that in-house. Now you're paying a subscription fee, to run that. I think the bigger questions, Greg, are more for monitoring data. Is this the kind of thing you want to do? So I actually kicked this around in our Packet Pushers IRC channel about this idea and said, what do you guys think about this? And the biggest objection that came back was security. Everyone's like, well, we're okay. So you want me to take all of my top secret special network monitoring data that's got probably usernames and passwords maybe embedded in it and SNMP strings and whatever else and have that all living up in the cloud? I really got to trust the cloud provider and I really got to trust PRTG that they're going to keep that data secure. And that's a fair point. I guess I think it's a little overblown because by and large, cloud operators are running data centers that are running at a certifiable, more secure tier than a lot of us are running ourselves in our own little data centers. So, how big of a concern is it? I don't know.
I don't know. We've seen some pretty big breaches of services in the cloud.
So the question is it a multi-tenancy sort of a breach where someone hacked into one tenant and then was able to gather other tenants' data? And we don't typically see those sorts of breaches. You're absolutely right. There are data breaches that happen with cloud-hosted services. But the question is whether whether your neighbor getting hacked means you also get hacked. And that we haven't really seen that I'm aware of. And I think that's the bigger concern there.
The irony, perhaps the most ironic part of all of these sorts of SaaS products is the fact that an IT team will outsource setting up a server and installing software when what's the job of an IT team?
Well,
just to set up servers and install software. And we're so obviously dysfunctional at it that we'll actually pay someone else to do it.
But that job's changing, though. I mean, to me, this is a reflection that IT is actually changing and that, yes, there is a lot of infrastructure maintenance that that IT teams are doing now, but there's better things they could be doing with their time. Why waste your time, you know, running a setup wizard and getting something running and, you know, tweaking settings on a box to get the software off the ground and going? If you can outsource that, that frees you up to do something that's more useful with your time. Do some network design. Start thinking ahead. Do some capacity planning. You know, run some reports that get you ahead in your infrastructure.
Yeah, my point is that an IT team, one of its core functions is setting up servers and installing applications and getting them running for the business.
Yeah, you're not hearing me. That's changing. That's going away. Who the heck wants to do that?
I know, but I'm just pointing out that SaaS, why would you want to install a server? Well, it's your core business function. I just want to draw that to people's attention.
Yeah, and if I want to, you know, step over to your side of the plate, I mean, you're wrong, but if I want to step over to your side of the plate for a minute, you could also argue, and what's the point of running PRTG in the cloud if I've still got to run a Windows box locally to run the agent that's going to do the probing for me? Someone could argue, well, I still got to have a Windows box there, so screw it. I might as well just run the whole PRTG instance, and why not? So that is a point you could make.
Yeah. It just amuses me. The whole purpose of IT teams is to deploy servers and install apps and get them running. And we talk about going to SaaS because we can't do that very well. And the second thing is that vendors are so bad at actually producing software to run on site that we actually would rather have SaaS.
Well, that's a big point. I really disagree strongly with your first point. But the second point is very valid that, you know what, if I don't have to do it because it's so painful because the vendors make it so painful, fine. I would gladly rather have them just deal with that headache for me. Yeah, exactly.
So we're actually rewarding the vendors for producing crap software. Is that
If we suck at this badly enough, maybe we can get recurring monthly revenue. So I got another briefing that I took this week, Greg. That was PRTG, and let's move on to a company called Accelerated Concepts, who I had never heard of before. And as that pitch came across my inbox, I perked up when I started to understand what they did. So Accelerated Concepts is a company that started back in 2006 by some ex-IBMers and AT&T lab folks and people like that. And they've been in the OEM space by and large, which is why most of us haven't heard of them. They've been making gear to spec, and then it gets rebranded to whoever it is that did that spec. Accelerated specialty, VPN devices, LTE routers, you know, that kind of networking gear. And what's changed here is that they've entered the enterprise market. They're expanding their business. They've got a commercial division now, and they're selling their products, certain of their own products with their own branding direct to enterprises. They got a couple of products they're out of the gate with. The 6300CX is a cellular extender. The 6350SR is a cellular router. And their pitch is for this, like this 6300 cellular extender. You run this thing somewhere in your building that's got good cell signal, and then run a Cat5 or 6 cable back into your data center, and then plug it into something you've got, a switch, a router, whatever. That little box can be a full router running OSPF or BGP, or you just plug it into your Cisco router if you want, rather than stuffing an HWIC into that router. So
this would be pretty cool for rural companies who, instead of having, you know, 1.5 meg T1s or something like that, you could plug this in. And I mean, a lot of these LTE services or even 3G services are going to do better than a T1.
And you're speaking to some of their target market as well. They really want to be in the retail space, folks that have got a lot of stores to deploy. And those stores could be scattered all over the place with mixed capabilities. And yeah, you can run one of these and do exactly that with it. Now, interestingly, this is not an SD-WAN company, but if you were to pair something like this with an SD-WAN solution, it would fit right in. You know, it would do very well.
A lot of the SD-WAN appliances are just Ethernet. So this would
give exactly.
You a 3G, 4G modem. Looks pretty low cost, or, you know, pretty practically priced is what I might say.
Practically priced, yeah. They're positioning this against like stuffing a 4G HWIC into a Cisco router, which I've done that before. That's pricey. And again, the 6300 little box frees you up from that physical concern where you've got to have the module right in the router. You can put this thing anywhere and run the cable back to it. So you get that good signal. Because I've had this problem. The data center is typically in the middle of your building. Very often your signal strength is attenuated, and you got to run an external antenna anyway. And then that can suck due to signal attenuation and so on. So
there's a whole bunch of companies in this space with the, you know, that doing the out of band stuff. Got a like very stable Linux distro running on a small, low cost board.
Well, cradle points here for sure.
And then
sure.
It's a question of whether you put serial ports on it or 3G modem, you know. 3G, 4G, 5G modems on it, or, you know, what you do with them. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, Cradlepoint is another one that comes.
Yeah, Cradlepoint is the absolutely. They're the big, the heavy hitter here besides Cisco in this space. And so, you know, and they've been able to charge, I think, maybe some more premium prices. Accelerated's bringing, you know, on the assumption that this is a reliable product that people are happy with. You can manage it centrally, but if people have uptake on this thing, that could drive some pricing down, you know, in this market.
Hmm. Yeah, and you'd mentioned retail, and one of the things that I always see in talking to customers is in retail environments especially, and this is very true for ATMs as well, you don't get that redundancy. You typically have a landlord telling you, here's the only thing that's coming into the building, and you're kind of stuck with one data feed. This gives you that alternative.
Yeah. So, yes, often if you're in somebody else's retail premises, like a shopping mall or a you know, shared shopping facility, they'll often dictate what WAN services you can have because they've cut a deal with AT&T to only offer you AT&T services in that building.
Exactly.
For which they take a slice, of course.
This reminds me of an interesting technical detail of the accelerated products. You can actually do out-of-band management with this thing over the SMS channel. So if you lose this thing on the Ethernet side for whatever reason, you know, 4G's flaking out, you can do out-of-band management via SMS. Not like you're texting commands to it, but it'll actually use, the central manager for the accelerator product line will use the SMS channel, send it an encrypted blob of data through SMS, which would be unreadable to humans, but be able to get you back control of the device, which I just thought was a real interesting little detail.
Well, that takes away the possibility of something that would die. Well, jumping away from 3G modems to the blockchain, Cisco got involved with the Hyperledger project this week. Now, Hyperledger is an open source project focused on blockchains. And I mean, blockchains are everywhere at the moment. The children in Silicon Valley are all over them like a fungus over a dead log. And you'd think that it's a bright, shiny future that looks like 1999 and the internet is just about to happen. John, why is Cisco jumping on the Hyperledger?
Cisco's jumping on it for two reasons. One is it's open source, so they can let other people do a lot of the work on it. But more importantly is they can push this off onto the device manufacturers because, quite frankly, nobody's going to make money on blockchain. Everybody's going to do it, but nobody's figured out the business model where they can make money. If Cisco wants to make a lot of money in IoT, and that's a strong strategic direction for them, they need something like blockchain to take some of the security risk away from them. So this is a smart move in my mind.
So getting involved with Hyperledger gives them access to a blockchain or a blockchain company, but they don't have to take the risk of implementing a blockchain until it's further down the pipeline.
Exactly.
All right. Are they saying they're hopeless at security? Is that what they're admitting to? Or they just don't know whether they want it? They're just thinking about how they can get working.
I think if they're smart, they're saying it's not their problem. That there's in the IoT world, there's a ton of problems with security, mostly because of the devices. And at this point, Cisco doesn't own the devices. If they own the devices, they'd have a beautiful end-to-end story where it's all Cisco from one end to the other. But every time you talk about IoT, it starts with a device, and that particular device is outside their control. So this is their way of adding a little more control over that and building up a firewall so that problems that happen from a security standpoint aren't really tracked back to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was reading the blog post here, and they're joining a bunch of other like signature companies: Accenture, Airbus, Deutsche Börse, the stock exchange company, Daimler, IBM, Intel, JP Morgan, NEC, blah blah blah. The list is pretty substantial. So this really looks like a corporate attempt at a blockchain, less sort of a Bitcoin, we hate the system, take it, tear it down type of thing.
Just trying to wrap my brain around the use case in IoT for Ledger and for what blockchain actually brings you. I mean, it makes a lot of sense with currencies because you're authenticating that the transactions that have been done couldn't have been done otherwise. No man in the middle. You can't fake it because everybody in the blockchain's done the computations to prove where we're at in the ledgers, where we're at. So how do we translate that sort of transaction, which makes sense for currency, into IoT kind of stuff? So I keep hearing, like you were describing, you know, fungus on a dead log. Everybody's all over it, blockchains. Oh, everybody's so excited about it. But the use cases seem to get thinner and thinner and harder to implement with a lot of computing power required. So I'm just very interested to hear what it is they're planning to do with this. And maybe John, I don't know if you got a better sense of that.
Well, I don't have a better sense of that, but I think you're right. Everybody's got to figure out what exactly they're going to do with this. I think, to me, you did hit an important point, which is there's so many of these devices out there, and the man in the middle, now I've got to protect for man in the middle for thousands of, you know, IoT-enabled thermostats within an office building. So how do I secure all that traffic? And there's...
Well, how do I also secure customers? Like, if you are a maker of something and you put a tool in somebody's premises and then you're actually offering to manage that, you need to then provide authenticated data that the service you're providing is actually being delivered. Does that make sense? And if you're starting to do distributed transaction or distributed transaction monitoring of entire buildings, you need to have a contract or a smart contract system that allows you to generate those contracts and to say, yes, I'm monitoring the IoT systems in that building. And I've got this ledger, distributed ledger that can't be falsified to say I did or did not do those things. I guess that's the way it's going. Is that?
I think that's a very valid point. I think as you get into more of the service business models, you've got to have a way to be able to authenticate your SLA.
Yeah, I think so. But it's also that we're also going, the shift to the service model also implies that the services will be automated. So instead of delivering services, you know, with a mop and a bucket and going around and washing the floors, we're going to have robots that wash the floors for us. Now, who's going to validate that the robots did those things and that the floors were cleaned and when did they do it and all that sort of stuff? And I just think that the blockchain here is being used as a distributed computing platform using contracts as much as it is the exchange of value. So the choice of using Bitcoin to exchange value, in effect, that Bitcoin Cash can be spent backwards and forwards and there's some nominal value attached to a Bitcoin token. The same thing it's the ledger that shows the history of the transaction, so that's important, not the transaction itself. The ledger is what validates the transaction occurred. So it's hard to explain. I've read blockchain several times and I think I've got an idea in my head, but verbalizing it is probably going to take me another 6 months to a year before I understand it well enough, maybe. Well, maybe that's enough. So yes, Cisco, of course, is making sure it's a big company. It's a $50 billion, sells $50 billion a year worth of stuff. So it's going to have its fingers in all the pies, just in case one of the pies has got money in it. So then it says, we knew that all along. That's exactly what you expect. What do we do? So in finance news this week, Arista posted its results. And last night, actually, American time, it posted a booming set of results. It's up 14.2% after hours, quoting a new high after beating the top and bottom lines. Not only did it grow more than it was expected, people were already predicting it was going to grow a lot. It did Q2 sales of $405 million. That's 50% more than this time last year and 21% more than last quarter. So it's an even more than the market had previously estimated, $362 million, and they delivered $405 million. The double-digit growth was across all five customer verticals. So unlike, say, we were talking about Juniper's results last week where they did well in the cloud, but everything else was sort of modest, down in service provider and a nice little boost in enterprise. Cisco's switching revenue, of course, is down pretty much across the board. Very, very interesting to see them sort of like that. Cisco's lawsuits haven't slowed them down.
Yeah, I mean, Arista really needs some of these lawsuits to keep going against them because it's doing well. I mean, it's really working for them.
So it's pretty interesting. Yeah, Cisco has just recently landed a bit of a hit. They saw some stuff get blocked and said you can't import that stuff into the USA. So no doubt Arista has promptly shipped it all to somewhere else. But what they also said in the financial report is that they've got a solution to work around it. So they're not going to be blocked out of selling products in the US for much longer. They have a way to get around the patent. They say so. They don't think. Now, one of the things about the financial results, George Notter from Jefferies, I'm quoting some of the stuff from his report. He says that product lead times remain in the normal range of 4 to 10 weeks. And in particular, the R series, that is the 7500R and the 7280R, which is the new stuff that they produce around the Jericho chipsets, if I remember rightly, is driving some of the strength. So their chassis switches in particular now represents over 30% of their business after launching just a year ago. So that's an awful fast take up of a new product. My guess would be is that the cloud companies are picking this up. They're selling a lot of this gear into the big cloud companies who are building out. When you're building 100,000 servers in a data center and each one of those has got 2 or 4 Ethernet connections in it, you need a lot of chassis. You may be using Whitebox at the top of rack, but somewhere in the back of that, there's a chassis. And Arista, I think, is the winner of that business. Just some final comments here. Cisco must be pretty concerned that Arista is increasing sales in spite of everything that they're doing. And to come in like 50% year-on-year growth, that actually is going to start in one quarter. So they've got $405 million. I think, John, you might know better than I. What's Cisco's enterprise switching revenue, about $2 billion a quarter?
I don't know off the top of my head, so I'm not going to guess. But yeah. That doesn't sound too far off.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, Arista is now, of course, not equivalent to Cisco in any way, shape, or form. So it's still growing. But, you know, Q2 sales of $400 million is actually a substantial number. That must be concerning to Cisco that they're losing that business at such a rate. Just to point out, of course, is that Hewlett-Packard Enterprises, or HPE, has very strongly partnered with Arista, and they're pushing Arista's products into the data center. So if you're an enterprise person and you're already a HPE customer, Cisco must be upset that HP has chosen to push Arista or lead with Arista in that part instead of sticking with Cisco products as they've done in years past. And then, of course, the Brocade and the Avaya transition. So Avaya was bought by Extreme in that transaction, closed last week. So if there's any customers with Avaya who might be looking around, any sort of change does trade an opportunity to think about it. And, of course, Brocade sitting in limbo at the moment because Broadcom got stalled from the purchase of Brocade by the Foreign Trade Commission in the US. So if I was a Brocade customer and or I had previously been looking at Brocade, maybe I would now be looking at Arista at that. So interesting times. Just one last thing I would like to mention, a final ad spot. Packet Pushers has a membership system. What we've been doing is putting together a system where you can sign up to be a member of Packet Pushers. And the reason being is that we have several things that we do for people that people didn't know about. Now, they didn't know that we had those. So the idea behind the membership system is there's a place where we can put together our two newsletters, and we've got some other stuff planned in the pipeline. It's a free membership. It costs you nothing to be there. It just gives you a way to be in contact with us in a way that doesn't necessarily happen in public, just limited it down. We'd love if you could come and join along. Keep in mind here, we don't want any personal information from you. We don't care who you work for. We don't ask you your fax number like some people do. All we want is an email address. We do ask for your name, first name, last name, but that's only to detect spam signups. It's really not to actually track you and to send you personalized email responses. So we'd love for you to come on over to packetpushers.net/members and sign up to be a member of our membership program. Well, thanks very much for being with us today. John, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at johnfree.com. It's johnfree.com.
Fantastic. And thanks for joining us today. I hope those virtual donuts don't mean you're on your bike too much this week, burning off those calories. And Mr. Banks, what about you? Are you up to anything exciting this week?
I'll be flying off to the West Coast to get some news from Aruba. And maybe I'll be talking about that on the next network break or writing it up on packetpushers.net. And maybe you can catch me tweeting about it at EC Banks.
All right. And thanks very much to Drew for leaving the seat available for me to sit in today. Hopefully it hasn't been too much of a jarring experience for you at home. And thanks for all the virtual donuts you threw at me. Really appreciate the audience interaction. Thanks very much to our sponsors today, ExtraHop, and of course us, Packet Pushers. We are actually sponsoring ourselves today. And thank you for joining us for another episode of The Network Break. If you enjoy the show, please like us on Facebook, leave a recommendation on the iTunes, or share a link with your friends. Check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure and Link Prop. And you can find all the links listed in today's show at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.